This is a Pinball News production.
I'm Leonard Zartarian. I'm the board chairman of the Pacific Pinball Museum, and it's a pleasure to be here today with Mike Sheese, our executive director. And thanks. Just wanted to say a word of thanks to all the Marin Civic Center for having us and hosting this event. It's the third annual. It's been very well attended, and we're really appreciative of the hospitality of the Marin Center here. And we want to thank all the volunteers that help make this show possible as well. Shows like this don't just happen overnight. It's a lot of planning in the works, and without the enthusiastic help and support of all of you, it wouldn't be possible. So I want to have a round of applause for all the volunteers. The topic of today's seminar is really the future and our goals and aspirations for the Pacific Pinball Museum. And I thought that to view that in the proper context, it would help to have an idea of what the past has been for us. So we're going to start. Mike's going to talk about that for a few minutes, and then I'll talk about where we are today and where we want to go in the future. So without any further ado, here's Mike.
Okay. Thanks, Larry. I guess to start, people wonder about the roots of this, and basically the Lucky Juju and what the heck that is and where it came from. So I just wanted to give a little brief history of how that got started and why. It was during a point in my life when I'd finished rebuilding a house, and I'd managed to rebuild the bottom of it and get it get a renter in there. So I was finally at this point where I didn't really have to work much. You know, I had a renter covering my my mortgage and putting cream of wheat in my belly, and I had a little spare time. So I thought, well, I'm going to get back into my art. So I thought it was one point in my life where I actually could just do art and not have a day job, really. So I went, wow, well, that's great. What am I going to do? I just been working at the Exploratorium for many years making interactive science exhibits. And I thought, wow, wouldn't it be cool to make interactive art? You know, that would be really cool. And what kind of art? Well, kinetic art. You know, I always liked kinetic art and make it interactive so it'd do something when you pushed a button or talk to it or something. And then I thought about it, I came to the conclusion, well, that's pinball, you know. And pinball is interactive kinetic art. And I thought, well, that would be neat, but what do you do with it? And I thought, well, I could buy old pinball machines and retheme them. So I started, I'd already had one pinball machine, a Gulfstream, and that was just one that I'd gotten after playing computer pinball games, and they just weren't doing it for me anymore. I had to go out and get a real pinball machine. So I had that Gulfstream. So I thought, well, I'm going to have to go out and look for old machines that just that are crappy, you know, with crappy artwork, so that I don't mind, you know, changing them. So I was looking and looking, and I'd see a machine here and there, and I just thought, well, that 2001, you know, that's one I always wanted. I'll just get that. And so I had that one, and then I found a Scuba. Rick Caviglia sold me. Like, oh, okay, I'll get that one too. And then I found a Motherload on eBay. This lady had, and my idea was like, I had to buy multiples because I'd take one, fix it up, learn how it worked, and take the other one, and then I could modify it. So I saw a Space Odyssey, and I looked at it, and I said, oh, that's in Benicia. And then I noticed that the quantity said 3, and I went, whoa, 3 of them? Well, that's perfect, you know, I'll go get that machine, you know. And so I went out there. Well, it turns out the, you know, lady had like 40 machines and multiples, and they were all electromechanical. That's what I wanted to work on. So I was wow, this is great. So I went through, picked out 12 of them. I think I paid like $300, $250 a piece for them. And I thought, wow, this is great. This will get me started. And my wife's looking at me a little funny, but she's cool with it. Then I started thinking about the rest of those machines in there. I thought, oh, crap, you know, I'm going to run out of machines. And these things are probably hard to come by. I had no idea, so I went, I better go back and get the rest of them. So I went back, and I got the rest of them that were left. It was about 36 of them. And they were all from AM, PM mini marts from Stockton, Fresno, that this guy was putting in there. And strangely enough, they were at the early Pinagogo, the Pinathon. They had little tags on them, and I didn't even know what that was. So I go, great, I get my first one, and I think it's a Jack in the Box. And I said, oh, this artwork sucks, you know. So I'm not going to mind scraping this thing down to the bare wood. So I'm free theming, thinking, well, what am I going to do with it? And I come up with a theme and how I'm going to do it. And it just, no matter how much beer and whiskey I drank, I just couldn't put that sandpaper to the play field, because I just go, oh, it's really kind of pretty the way it is. And I just felt like I really shouldn't do this. And then I finally, I just couldn't do it, you know. So I put them all aside, took them to my friend's warehouse, and they were sitting there. And they were really burning a hole in my head, just sitting there. I go, God, these things, you know, they really should be out being played. That's what pinball is all about. So at that point, I'd run into somebody, Berkeley Mac, who had a basement thing going on every Friday night. So I figured I'd have to ask his blessing. Now Berkeley Mac is an interesting pinball character. He does for free this pinball party on Friday nights. I can't tell you where it is. You have to know somebody who knows where it is, and they will take you there, and then usually bring a tribute or a gift of beer or something else. And then you have to play.
Remember where it is next time too.
Yeah, it's it's just you spread it by through a personal nature. At any rate, so I go to Mac because I have to ask permission. It's kind of like, you know. and I go, well, Mac, I'm thinking of running this little storefront and putting out a donation jar, putting some machines up. I'll just do it Saturday night so I don't interfere with you. And would that be okay? And he's going, well, yeah, sure, that's fine with me, Mike, but I'll just warn you, it ain't going to work. You're not going to make any, you know, you're not going to be able to pay your rent on donations. They won't pay it. And I go, well, okay. So I opened up the Juju, and it was a Saturday night thing. Put out the donation jar. And yes, it was hard to extract that $5 from pinheads. I couldn't believe it. I go, God, they're all on free play. You know, what's the problem? But they're a tough crowd. And we did that for a little bit. And then I ran into Jim Gruber. He showed up, and he got all excited about what we were doing. And he and I ran it for, gosh, it seems like a year and a half, and it still wasn't ever paying the rent, and it was kind of like buying a boat, you know, just constantly draining your money. So finally, I got the idea to like, well, maybe I should put some artwork on the side, you know, with these. I had all these windows around it. I'll put up these little panels, and we'll hang artwork up there and do a show. Because I'm sick of looking at the back of those machines, you know. Well, we did that. The Chronicle got a hold of the story. And all of a sudden, I remember Jam and I sitting in there, and we were just, it was incredible. We were going from $36 a night to like $200, you know, which was, we were just going, wow, you know, we can pay our rent, you know. So the art thing brought in this whole other group of people. And I realized that was what was going to make this work, you know, is getting it out there to other people and letting them become aware of it. So we ran that we've been running the Juju for almost 8 years now. In the process, I had to do a trip. I was freelancing for the Exploratorium again, and they sent me out to Washington to work at the National Geographic. And on my day off, of course, I have to go to another museum because I love museums. So I went to the Smithsonian, and I went to the Smithsonian American Heritage Museum to see what kind of pinball collection they had, because I was always told about, you know, if you're going to clear coat your pinball machine, you got to use certain things. Don't use auto body because they can't remove that. They want them just pure. So I think, wow, they must have an incredible collection. So I go out there and I'm looking for a couple hours and I can't find anything. And finally, after the third hour, you know, I'm asking all around, and somebody says, "Well, I think I think what you're looking for is down in the basement, you know, down around where the electricity, history of electricity, and maybe somewhere around there. So, oh, okay, great. So I go down there, and I'm looking and looking, and finally I find their section for Coin-Op Americana, and they had one machine, and it was a Ms. Pac-Man video game. So I was really disheartened, and I left there just shaking my head going, geez, this is the greatest American icon I can think of. What the hell's wrong with this? You know, this isn't right. So I came back determined that there should be a museum, and started filing the 501c3s and established the Neptune Beach Amusement Museum first, and then that became the Pacific Pinball Museum. And that's where I met Larry, I think.
It is. The Neptune Beach Amusement Museum was named after the amusement park in Alameda and on the southwest end of the island that was operating from the mid-20s to the early 30s.
Late 30s.
Yeah.
Operated. It's kind of amazing because it operated through the Depression just like pinball did. Mm-hmm. And things are bad, people want to escape.
I think at one time it was even considered to be the Coney Island of the West. It was very popular until the Navy moved in and decided they needed the land more than the amusement park did. We thought that the Neptune Beach name may be a bit narrow, geographically speaking. Perhaps we could appeal to a broader audience by renaming the museum the Pacific Pinball Museum. That was about 3 years ago?
Three years ago.
Where we are today is we currently have a collection of 650-plus machines, and we have a 3,000 or so square foot facility on Santa Clara and Webster in Alameda, which we've basically outgrown. And as Mike said, we've achieved and accomplished some important milestones. The first one was getting the 501c3 nonprofit status with the IRS. The second one was really securing the collection. The collection now is well in place. Not to say that we don't still accept donations of games and donations of financial support, which we do, but with those two in place, what's really missing now, the missing piece of the whole puzzle, is a home. The current location is really more of an interim solution more than anything, but you've heard of pinball widows. Our machines are really pinball orphans. And they do need a place to stay and a place to live and a place to be set up and enjoyed. Because right now we're renting a warehouse in Alameda, and they're all, not all of them, but a lot of the games are standing on their ends with the cabinets separated from their heads. And that really doesn't do anybody any good. We really want to see these set up, played, and enjoyed, not only for our current generation, but for years and years to come. Because a lot of these games are 50, 60, 70 years old. We want them to be enjoyed and played 50 to 70 years from today. Now, in our mission statement, I don't know how many of you have been to our booth out on the main hall here, but the mission statement says what we're trying to do is really inspire an interest in art, science, and history through pinball, and to promote and preserve that unique part of American culture. When we say we want to preserve it, it's not in the sense of putting these games behind velvet ropes, as it were, in an automobile museum where everybody sort of goes, look how shiny the chrome is on the Duesenberg. Don't touch it, though, or dare not start it up and drive it. We actually want them to be preserved in that sense, but to honor them, as it were, with a sense of reverence for the past that they deserve, but also to make sure that they have a relevance in the future and, of course, in the present. So, and as Mike said, it's this interactive aspect of being kinetic where the players interact with them. That's really the important thing, because I know you've all played pinball, and for anybody who hasn't played pinball and had their hands on the two flipper buttons and scoring points and feeling the reverberation of sounds of bells, for example, in an electromechanical game, there's no way you can explain that to someone who hasn't actually gone through that experience. But for people who have, it's just not the same with a cyber, version of pinball are today.
When we get kids coming in and you go, well, have you ever played pinball before? And they go, well, yeah, I play it on the computer all the time. We go, well, I think you're going to find this a little different, And sure enough, they come in and go, oh, this is a lot better. It's called reality.
Now, when when people have, just in the last few days during our show here, a lot of people have come up to us and asked, you know, what's your museum all about? What do you expect it to look like? Well, we don't really have any visual aids here as far as slides go or a PowerPoint presentation, but our visual aids are really standing out there in the main hall. That's what we want the museum to look like. In fact, this whole exposition is really designed to give people a taste, as it were, an appetizer of things to come. We want it to be more or less a one-way ticket to a permanent state of pinball nirvana, not the round-trip crap that most people are used to.
We don't want to be strictly an arcade, and there seem to be a few museums popping up, and they're basically arcades, and that's a good experience too. But we want to be the Smithsonian of pinball. We have the means to capture all the documentation. The Gordon Hosse collection was incredibly generous that we just received. But on top of that, waiting for us is all the documents that Dick Buchel and Gordon Hosse have collected. This material really needs to be archived. And Rob Hawkins and Don Muting have a wealth of information that I guess the best way to put this is, if it falls into private hands, then it kind of gets lost. One of our duties as a museum would be to curate this and make it available for research, and to provide, you know, copies of it just provide categorize all the information and put it out there. And I didn't see any of this happening. You know, it seems like there's people that collect the flyers and information like that, and it's there. And if you go over to their house, you get to see it. But really, it needs to be. This is a national treasure, is the way I feel about it. And if we don't do something about it, then it is going to fall into private hands. And there's horror stories about that that I've heard. You know, from other museums. You know, about, yeah, there was this collection, but yeah, it fell into private hands. It's just gone. You know, and then they might pass away, and it's just gone. You know, people owning the estate, they don't know what it is, and it just goes to the dump.
So I think, just in terms of the rarity of some of these games, I mean, they're not only beautiful to look at, but when you think of the survival rate of a lot of the wood rails, for example, I mean, games that were made in the 50s and late 40s, the typical survival rate today is probably less than 2%, somewhere between 1% and 2% of all the models produced exist today. So if a typical production run was 600 games in 1950, you're probably talking about a surviving number of about 8 to maybe 10. And even of those 8 to 10, it's hard to say what condition they're going to be in. So we have some very rare, obvious, and unusual pieces in our collection. The main objective for us now is really to make the leap, or the move, from our current location to, as I said, a much larger building. And this Marin Civic Center is about 22,000 square feet. So you have to imagine a building that would be roughly double this size, would have all the machines displayed, would have areas of art exhibits, a room devoted to restoration techniques where we could host seminars, a classroom where we can teach children and adults about electricity, the principles of electricity and physics, have a repair shop where we could repair and restore games, a gift shop where we could sell merchandise, a restaurant, perhaps with dimly lit lighting and back glasses lit up, mounted on the walls, an oral history section where people could put on a set of headphones and listen to stories being told by designers and artists of pinball machines, or just enthusiastic collectors or ordinary just participants and players talking about why they play pinball and why they enjoy it. And as Mike said, just imagine a Smithsonian, as it were, type of atmosphere only built around pinball. So people of all ages could come in and learn about art, history, science, and the cultural significance of these things, and at the same time be entertained. So we want it to be, I think we've got the entertainment part down, but we really want it to be educational at the same time. So if people are not careful, they'll actually learn something while they're there at the museum.
Yeah, you'll have this golden carrot of of amusement, you know, with all the bright lights and everything that pinball machines and arcade machines offer. And yet you'll go in there and you'll have these choices of which venue you want to go down. I'm interested in the art. You know, I'll explore that whole area. Or, where the heck these things come from? Like, you know, and so you can explore the history of it. Or if you're just fascinated by the electrical circuits and the engineering behind it, you can pursue that. So it's kind of a multifaceted museum. Or if you just want to come in and play them, there's that. The whole key to this, or the reason behind this, is one, to educate, but two, is sustainability. If you don't branch out and offer these different curriculum to the public, then you're not going to be successful. In other words, I think the other museums that are just strictly arcades are only going to cater to those people that want to go there. We've already branched out, and you can see how many people we draw in with our expo. My wife, Melissa, did all those banners in the hallway out there. And I was kind of amazed at how many people just sit there and before they come in there, they're reading every one of them and going, wow. And it's a whole different take on pinball. You're not in front of a machine. You're reading about the art and somebody's interpretation of it. And that's just a whole other little facet to the gem of pinball, you know. And there's so much to glean out of it that we want to capitalize on that so that we can make a sustainable museum, one that doesn't have to depend on government cheese, and you know,
we're open to TARP and government bailout money. We haven't closed that window.
Yeah, I haven't taken any bribes lately. Have you?
Lately,
no. That's what I mean. The past week or so.
Mike was briefly just touching on the motivation of why someone would even come to a pinball museum, and it got me to thinking as to why people even play pinball in the first place. And I have a couple of friends who think that on a broader scale that life itself is kind of like an amusement park. And I mean, it mirrors life's up and downs with the roller coaster, the thrill of it, the excitement and the rush you get when you're at the top, and then as you plunge down when things aren't going so well for you. And it has a haunted house, maybe that could be your work environment, a tunnel of love where you meet your spouse, your partner, and of course a midway place with games of skill, games of chance. Along the midway carnival, you would find pinball machines. And pinball machines, to me, really are kind of a representation or a metaphor for life itself, too, in the sense that on a five-ball game, if you're not doing so well your first two or three balls, your natural inclination might be to get discouraged. But if you hang in there and try harder and practice, and then maybe on your fourth or fifth ball, you might actually win a replay. It's never too early to give up. You have to kind of persevere. And so I think that's a good sort of learning experience that everyone can get something out of. Pinball also is a very social kind of activity. It's not the kind of thing where you, like today's video games, where kids are kind of isolated and just, you know, focused on a computer screen for 8 hours at a time. Pinball is the kind of thing where you can have friends standing around you. You could be talking, cavorting with one another, criticizing each other, or say, hey, good shot, you know, or go for the seven, hit the eight now, or hit the targets.
Or, wow, you suck.
you just can't do that kind of thing with a video game. Video games, they're pre-programmed, first of all, in the software, and you can get to certain levels of difficulty as you go. The more money, the more quarters you put into the game on location. But you seem to max out at a certain plateau, or at least I did. I can never get past, you know, level 19 on Ms. Pac-Man or whatever it was. But with pinball, you don't...
There's 11, it, level 19?
You wow. Just with pinball, you just never know where the ball's going. It's totally random, and it is kinetic. You're interacting with the machine itself. And I think just in terms of the themes, the difference between a video... You'll notice we're calling this the Pacific Pinball Museum, not the Pacific Pinball and Video Museum. That there's a reason for that, and the reason is, well, first of all, from a technological and design standpoint that I mentioned, but I think from a psychological and an emotional perspective, video games, at least the ones I played when I was a kid, seemed to be focused on either fear or hate. You're either afraid of being killed, or you're going to be killed, or you're killing other objects, whether it's shooting down spaceships or even Ms. Pac-Man, where you're afraid of being gobbled up by those little goblins that would come and get you if you hadn't eaten the right number of dots. But with pinball, there's no... I would challenge you to go out and find a pinball machine that shows anyone being killed. It's the themes are either happiness or love or temptation or some compassion or something that's along those lines, the furthest thing from fear and hate. And I think fear and hate are actually very quite expensive on a physical level and on a psychological level, whereas compassion and happiness and I guess love itself is free. It doesn't cost anything. So
I can't think of one. Fathom, where they're murdering the diver.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, it's true.
Okay. Well, it's a pretty small number. It's a pretty small percentage.
But the Martians are happy to die.
I think that Fathom refers to those beings as nymphs.
Oh yeah.
Oh okay.
We're not quite sure if
exactly. Them. Yeah, they might. He may be getting loved to death. Yeah. I got to agree with Larry. It's one thing I always tell people. It's like, well, with video games, it's a program that you're locked into. It's you against some monster maybe called Gravator or something. Whereas with pinball, it's you against gravity. And, you know, that it's physics, you know. And every pull of the plunger is a different scenario. I mean, have you ever played a pinball game where everything happened exactly the same? I mean, it just doesn't happen. It's because it's real, and it's real metal on real wood, and it's a variable, and that's the beauty of it. I mean, that's why I always go back to it. I dabbled in a little bit of the video games, but it just never held my interest because they were kind of forcing me to jump through all these hoops. And after a while, I'm just going, yeah, screw that. I don't want to jump through your hoops. I want something to you know, that felt like I was actually in control a little more. So I think pinball has that lasting quality. And it's kind of funny. The arcades kind of disappeared. Video, I mean, the pinballs were always fewer and fewer in the arcades because of a maintenance thing. And there's a little joke about, you know, the difference between a pinball repair toolkit and a video toolkit is, you know, with a video toolkit basically consists of a glass cleaner and some paper towels. Pinball, you need some real tools. So there's a whole maintenance issue. And I think that is, to me, the main reason that pinball got pushed out of the commercial realm and there's no more arcades for pinball because they require a lot of maintenance. And on financial level, I guess they're not worth it. But I think the public actually, you know, they want that. You know, I mean, one reason that it died out is because the machines weren't getting maintained. People go up to play it, and this flipper sucks, and you know, this ain't working right. So they'd move over to the video games, and I think that's kind of what happened.
Yeah. The other thing about preserving and promoting pinball in general and our responsibility as a museum is that we have to do this in the proper way as far as bringing in the next generation of pinball players. I mean, I noticed there aren't any children in here under the age of 18. As a museum, we really don't want to hide from the fact that pinball's history has kind of a sordid past. It's associated with either gambling or something you would find in a smoky pool hall or a bar or a bowling alley. It's not the kind of thing that you would want your sons or daughters to spend a lot of time with, at least not as young kids. But what we don't really want to, you know, shy away from that and sweep it under the rug. And then on the other hand, we don't want to glorify it and put that up on a pedestal, but we want to just sort of present pinball for what it is and let people make up their own minds with our bias, of course, toward art, science, and history. There are some folks that would say playing pinball is the surest road to downward social mobility because as a kid, you have to break open your piggy bank and spend all your nickels, dimes, and quarters if you were going to be become good enough to win replays and impress your friends.
Yeah, yeah. And one other thing that really eggs me on, it was funny, we were in the bar the other night, and it was Gordon Hossie and Berkeley Mack, two people that, you know, I thought need to meet each other, and, you know, it was great. They were talking, and, you know, Berkeley Mack is a Berkeley hippie, you know, and Gordon's East Coast. I don't think he's really conservative, but, you know, they might have different views on things. Gordon asks him, he goes, well, Mack, what got you into pinball, you know? And Mack says, well, Gordon, you know, I was protesting the war, and I didn't like the fact our country was spilling blood all over the planet, and the whole nuclear thing, and, you know, my country was just doing a lot of stuff I didn't agree with, and I really didn't like it, you know, and I was out there, you know, protesting on it and everything and doing what I could. And, you know, I just had to go, I said, you know, I needed something to love about my country, you know. I needed something to love about America, and I found it. It was pinball. And I thought, wow, that's pretty profound, because if now more than ever, I think we do need something to hold up about America that, like, wow, you know, we made these incredible machines, and I don't want to see them go the way jukeboxes went over to Europe. You know, they have all our jukeboxes now, and they're like going, well, foolish Americans. And I mean, they got a nice pinball museum in Paris, and there's one happening in Australia, you know. And I find it incredible that we haven't done that yet. And apparently the government isn't going to do it. They're not. So there's none of the museum institutions take this seriously. I think they will once we've started to present it in the light that they can understand. And, you know, maybe we're putting it up on a pedestal, and a lot of people disagree with that because they think, oh, it's a hobby, and you're going to take away from the hobby. Well, no, it's more than a hobby. It's art. It's kinetic art. It's American ingenuity. It's an American icon, and it really is something that we should be proud of and really hold up and make other people look at it and be proud.
So our job as directors on the board of the museum is really to make sure that we continue to put on events like this to keep the museum running, because this is really our one annual fundraiser. But in the meantime, it really helps to have not only the enthusiastic support of our volunteers and our advisory board members, but people such as yourselves, as you're talking to friends you know or relatives or anybody who may be in a position of either offering services to the museum or contributing in a financial sense, and just being sort of the ambassadors, as it were, of pinball, or the, I like to consider myself a Johnny Appleseed, I guess, as it were, but just spreading you know, the word about pinball and what we're actually trying to do, because it really is a grassroots kind of effort that we're talking about here. But the more you can get out there and get our story told in the public, these things kind of feed on themselves and build a momentum after a while. And I think
we're coming up to that point, because we've been doing it for 8 years promoting pinball. We've got a few things happening. One, the San Francisco Airport Museum has been working with the Pacific Pinball Museum and Richard Conger and the Gordon Hossie Collection and Gordon Hossie. We've all been contributing towards this display that's going to open up November 25th in the San Francisco International Airport in their largest display cases, about 32 machines or more, mm-hmm. about the history of pinball. You won't get to play them. They're going to be behind glass. But it's quite amazing, because they worked with us, and they really wanted to do this, but they didn't know how to do it until we suggested, hey, what, you know, you might have to leave them off the legs. And they went, oh, yeah, okay, then we can show them, you know, because their setup was such that if they were on their legs, people wouldn't see them. Mm-hmm. So they're working with us, and they built these special cabinets to hold them and the back glasses. So that's going to open November 25th, and we are going to be opening the Pacific Pinball Museum that's on Webster Street. It's the extension of the Juju. That'll open, we're shooting for November 10th, mm-hmm. and we'll be open 6 days a week is what we're going to planning. And we'll still be doing the juju on the weekends where you come in through the rear speakeasy door. But for the most part, we're opening ourselves up as a respectable museum, and it'll be through the front door. And it's a big deal for us, you know, because this is what we've been working on for a long time. We'll be having the History of Pinball exhibition to open up, but we're going to be rotating exhibits in there. We're going to have a storefront where we're going to have some machines for sale. I believe Herb Silvers is going to give us one of his machines to put out there.
From Retro Pinball, from King of Diamonds. Pinball,
yeah. And then we'll have machines from doubles from our collection that we'll be restoring and selling to raise money for the museum. And Pinball Revival will be running machines through there. We're going to have the Dick Bichelle Pinball Encyclopedia, the Shalhoub books, a lot of pinball paraphernalia, and all our posters and artwork. And we will start developing the traveling exhibits. I believe the historical show will be one of the first ones. We're working towards getting a total package of pinball science exhibits together. We've been working on that for a while, but we actually require quite a bit of funding to develop the curriculum for that. But pinball art exhibits and pinball history exhibits are pretty easy to package up, and so we're going to be doing that and putting them out there. But they'll also be rotating through our museum. So you'll be able to come in the front door, hold your head up high, walk in and play pinball like a respectable citizen instead of slinking in the back door and at night.
Well, one thing I didn't mention was a home for future museum. And some of the sites we're looking at are the Exploratorium in San Francisco, which, if you don't know, is one of the nation's largest hands-on interactive science museums. It currently occupies 200,000 square feet in the Palace of Fine Arts right near the Golden Gate Bridge. The Exploratorium folks are in the process of moving to two of the piers down closer to the Bay Bridge, I think toward the end of 2011 or the beginning of 2012. When that happens, the city of San Francisco is talking about carving up the 200,000 square foot space now occupied by Exploratorium into fourths or perhaps fifths. And that would be ideal. That 45 to 50,000 square feet is just what we need, and it would certainly be a high-profile location for our museum. The other two spaces are perhaps in the Presidio, where the Walt Disney Museum recently opened last week, or perhaps Crissy Field, also near the Golden Gate Bridge. So we're looking at places in San Francisco. There are also some in the South Bay, maybe in the East Bay, but we really want to be, and we have to be, a destination where not only locals will come and see us, but the tourists as well, and just ordinary family and folks that are interested in coming to see a world-class museum with their children. And I think that's really the way to do it. Anyway, we want to really thank everyone again for coming, and thank you for all your support. And we can open it up for questions if anyone has any. Yes.
Yes.
Now, given the apparently still existent ties between Chicago and the White House, you look around, you might be able to find a way into some of that money. The big four pinball companies having come from Chicago, it only takes one connection to find somebody to say, hey, this would be a worthwhile endeavor.
Do you know anybody?
That's a great suggestion. Actually, yeah. Chicago is the cradle of pinball civilization. I guess all the manufacturers were located there at one time.
We did maybe step on a toe when we first started our expo. We call it an expo because we believed it was an expo. I mean, it was more than just a pinball show. We did a bang up on the first year and the second year and now we did step on a toe or two. But I was happy to see Rob Burke from Chicago Expo came here this year with his with an olive branch. He wanted to see what we were doing, and then he actually saw that we were not out to you know, that we were just trying to bring pinball out for everybody, you know. that there was we're not trying to steal his thunder or anything like that. We just wanted another show that did represented different aspects of pinball. So
he's actually invited us to come and speak at their pinball expo in a couple of weeks in Chicago, and I thought that was awfully gratifying and very nice of him to do that.
We're just waiting for the gold engraved invitation.
I heard that you folks did a presentation at the Smithsonian recently.
Well, Jim Dietrich from Pinball Revival, he worked on the William Wiley pinball. There was this, I don't know if you, everybody knows about the William Wiley pinball machine. William Wiley, famous American artist, was commissioned by Joe Sweeney to make these a series of seven or eight pinball machines. And the Smithsonian National Art Museum was doing a retrospective of William Wiley's art, and the centerpiece, the jewel of the whole show, was that pinball machine. And it it's actually on CNET this morning. Rob Hawkins showed me because pinball art, a pinball art machine is at Smithsonian. That was pretty amazing. So Jim went out there and gave a brief talk about what went into it and working with William Wiley, and it was pretty, and talked about the museum out there.
For those of you who came to our show last year, it's the machine William Wiley rethemed was a Gottlieb North Star from 65 or 66, and it's called Punball. I believe the theme is global warming. It's a great, great, fantastic looking machine. That was its world debut, I guess.
Yeah, it was world
here at
debut.
Our show.
And those machines, I mean, it kind of is really boosting what we think pinball is, which is a high form of art. Some of those machines sold for $125,000 a piece, and there's one at the DeRosa Winery. There's one down in L.A. One went to San Jose Art Museum. They bought the first one. I remember setting it up with Jim. And it's quite something. And there's other ones in the work. The Metallica machine is pretty amazing. And there's going to be more. I think this is starting to snowball, finally. Mm-hmm. And it deserves it, and we've worked hard, so... Hopefully, we will move forward with this, and with your help, we're going to make this happen.
Yes.
Do you guys think it's going to take another 5 years to get to the museum?
No. In fact, along with thanking everyone for coming to the show this year, we hope not to see anyone next year.
What?
Because that will mean that we will have found our building and we'll have our museum up and running, and we won't have to put on an expo. I mean, all the machines will be set up and living in the permanent home of the museum.
We have an interim museum with what we're opening in November, and it's a way to get our curriculum together and our exhibits. But our next move is going to have to be to a big permanent place, because we're killing ourselves moving these things. I mean, and it doesn't do the machines much good. They really need a permanent home. It's just a matter of finding the proper funding and the proper venue. We are looking for a historical building. I don't want to put it in a strip mall.
No. I mean, this is all, you know, a lot of fun to put this show on for 3 days of, like, you know, peace, love, and pinball, kind of like Woodstock. I mean, this was the 40th anniversary of Woodstock, after all. Kind of like Pinstock, only without the mud and the music and the psychotropic mind-altering drugs, I guess.
Bad acid, yeah.
Although there's some interesting things at the hotel across the way, I think. But the whole point of raising money by putting the show on is to have the permanent home. So once the permanent home is there, I mean, why would we have to move close to 400 machines to put them out in the public? They'd already be home. So that's... Whether it happens in 1 year or 5 years, it's really all up to us, and that's why the sense of urgency is what it is, as far as spreading the word and raising funds to make it happen.
Yeah.
Again, thanks for coming.
Yeah, thanks
very
much.
Helpful.
Thank you.